Hi, Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today. We switch gears and head towards Apple computers and accessories and welcome in Joe Rhodes, the self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. He's been supporting Macs professionally since 1999 and unprofessionally for several years before that. In other words, in an amateur role and not necessarily anything. I don't mean to denigrate you in any way, Joe.
No, it's family and friends and that and before that. So.
And Joe's website is Joe Rhodes, rhodes.com/WPR. And Joe, again, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hey, great to be here.
I understand that there is a Trojan horse that is a threat to Macintosh users.
Yeah, actually, this just came out, I think, about this week or last week. And if I can, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about what a Trojan horse is, because that might not be obvious to most people. I mean, most people are familiar with computer viruses, and they just kind of sneak onto your computer when you're not looking, and they do all kinds of nasty things, and they're problematic. And to date, there aren't any viruses for Mac OS X out in the wild. But a Trojan horse is a little bit different. A Trojan horse, just like the fable goes, somebody creates some software and they say it's going to do some wonderful thing for you. And you look at it and you're going, oh, I could really use that wonderful thing. And so you take it and you install it. So you use your credentials and you click on the mouse and you click OK and it installs. And it turns out it doesn't do what it says it was going to do. And instead, it does something kind of nefarious. What they found out in the wild is a Trojan horse, and it's got a very bizarre name, but essentially, and at the moment, it's on pornography sites, so hopefully it's not going to spread too far, but it could show up in other places. But what they do is they say, hey, if you can't see the pictures on this website, you need to install this special little codec. And people who want to see these pictures click on this, and they install what they think is the codec to watch, look at these pictures. And it turns out, there's no pictures there. And what they did is they put a little piece of software on your Mac, and it starts doing some things. So it's something that you need to watch out for, and it's just as a general rule of thumb, it's not gonna sneak its way on your computer. You have to actively do something to get this. And really, this is just general good computing practice. You always want to watch out what kind of software that you purposely install. You always want to make sure that it comes from someone that you trust. So, for example, if Apple is introducing a piece of software, if it's coming from Apple, you don't have to worry about it being bad. Or look around on the internet and make sure that this piece of software has a reputation. If you Google for it, you'll probably find, okay, well, there's discussion boards about it. There's people complaining about things that work and don't work. You got a pretty good feel that this is really a good piece of software. But if you just find a random piece of software and it just pops up and says, hey, why don't you install me? You'll probably be a little suspicious of it,
Like taking candy from a stranger.
Right, unless you're at a parade or Halloween, in which case then it's okay.
That's true.
Wait a minute. Okay. So anyways, hopefully it's not going to be real widespread, but it's conceivable it's going to make its way out to more places eventually. So, but it's new. It's the first one I've heard of that specifically targets Mac OS X.
Let's talk with some listeners, and if you'd like to join in, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Joe, the Mac is on a roll. Sales growing so much faster than the overall PC market, especially in this country. By some measures, Mac laptops are now approaching a 20% share of U.S. non-corporate sales, up from the less than 5%, let's say, that they once enjoyed.
We're really, really exploding. And boy, if you really want to get a grasp of this, just go into a coffee house sometime and look at the number of Apple laptops that are in the coffee house. It's amazing.
One of the things that the Badger Herald student newspaper at the UW-Madison carried a story yesterday warning about the Wi-Fi security risk with unencrypted wireless networks, such as found in coffee houses.
Right. And this is not necessarily specific to Mac. This is specific to computers in general.
Right.
Normally, when you get on the internet, you have, like if you're in your home, you have a wire that's connected to your computer, that's connected to a wire in the wall, that's connected to a wire in the phone company, and unless, the government has managed to tap into this, you're reasonably certain that what you're typing in your computer is not heard by your next door neighbor until it gets to where it's got to go. With wireless networks, it's a lot like a two-way radio. And there's really nothing guaranteeing that what you're typing into your computer and sending over to, say, Google, isn't something that someone sitting next to you could intercept. So that's a bit of a concern. Now, there's things that you can watch for. I mean, generally speaking, most of the stuff, when I'm browsing Google, I don't care if somebody sees that. It's not that big of a deal. But at times you are concerned about this. Now, fortunately, there's some built-in safeguards around this already. For example, let's say you go to your bank's website. Your bank's website gets encrypted from the moment it leaves your computer by any fashion, whether it be a wire or wireless, until it gets to the bank's computer so that nobody in between there, no matter if they can see everything that's going on, they cannot see what you're typing in or what you're looking at. And that's when you see in your web browser, you see a little padlock, you see HTTPS. The thing that's a little less secure, though, those are the really the high secure sites, and those are happens automatically.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other times, like let's say you go to Hotmail or Yahoo to check your mail, or you have Mac OS X's mail application set up. It's not always guaranteed that the way the password transfers back and forth between your computer and, say, Hotmail is going to be encrypted. I think Hotmail is a bad example. I think Hotmail actually is encrypted. I could be mistaken. But there's times when your passwords are not necessarily encrypted. So it's conceivable that someone could tap in and find out, you know, what is your email password because it just got sent over the air in clear text. So it's a little tricky, honestly, to make sure that you've got all your bases covered, that you're not exposing something that you don't know. Generally speaking, if you're on a wireless network and you don't, you know, have control of it, and if the wireless network is encrypted, you're okay, because then everything that's in the air is gibberish to everyone except you and the person that's supposed to get it.
All right. We can talk more about that as we go along. Let's take some phone calls, and we'll start off with Dennis in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Dennis. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks. My son has an iBook.
Okay.
And the disk space on it seems to be consumed by something that we can't really see. I'm wondering if you have any ideas.
Do you know how big the disk is total?
Offhand, I don't.
Okay, I'm trying to place just how old or young this iBook is.
Oh, it's about 2 years old.
Okay, so there's some things on there that you can't quite see. Mac OS X actually has, I think it's about between 4 and 7 gigs of stuff that it puts on. If you do a full installation of Mac OS X, it's almost 4 to 7 gigs. Now, is this something that's growing steadily?
Seems to be, yeah.
So you're like running out of space on this thing right now?
Correct.
One thing you can do, and it's kind of digging into the internals of the computer. Mac OS actually hides a lot of what's going on underneath it because you don't really need to know. You can get in there if you want to, but it kind of hides a lot of that stuff. But I wonder if there's an area where it keeps log files, like, you know, it kind of records what it's doing on a daily basis so you can see if something's going wrong. And I wonder if something's going on that's maybe creating a huge log file. And that might be a good place to start looking. But by default, this is hidden. So how do you find it? And the answer is, in the Finder, there's a menu that's called Go. And when you click on that, it gives you a whole bunch of places. And then there's an option towards the bottom that says Go to Folder. And what this will do is it will open up a little window where you can type in exactly where you want to go, even if it's one of these hidden folders. So the trick is you just have to know which hidden place you want to go to. And the answer is, if you Google around for this, you'll find, you know, written explanations for this. But if you type in the /, kind of like you do in a web address, a /VAR for var, and then another /, and then log for log. So it's /var/log. That will take you into the logs directory and kind of poke around in there and see if there's something that's really, really big. And in general, you're pretty safe to throw away older log files. They're kept around for a certain amount of time, but it's possible that maybe your log files, for whatever reason, aren't getting rotated off when they're old. So maybe that's a place to look and see if there's something big. If not, do a little Google searching for the ability to see some of these hidden files. There's a couple utilities that you can use, and snoop around. And if you start to find one that looks, you know, just massive, that might be a hint of where this space is going.
How old of log files, in other words, how far back is safe to go to delete those?
Oh, I'd say anything that's a week old or older. What you lose is if you throw away a log file that you know you needed to go to, you just can't go and say, oh, well, what did my computer have an issue with 3 weeks ago?
Okay.
That's what you lose, and most people never use that ability anyways. So.
Great.
But otherwise, I would search around for places to look for, find some of the hidden files and see if you can find something in there that's growing, but I kind of wonder if it's the log files, because that can happen.
Dennis, thanks very much. Good luck to you. OS X came out in 2001. Now the newest version of OS X is out called Leopard, replacing Tiger. And is it faster and is it better than Vista?
Oh, boy, that's a loaded question. That kind of gets back to the, you know, is it Chevy
or... You have 60 seconds to answer.
is it Chevy or Ford that's better? You know, that's a tough one. I'm not going to compare it against Vista. I think there's plenty of people that will be happy to do that. What I can tell you is macOS 10.5 is faster than macOS 10.4. I was quite surprised. I've installed it on a couple computers, and it's really snappy. They have done some really, really brilliant things. A built-in backup system that's easy enough for my mom to use, and I think she's listening today. She's getting a new computer. She doesn't know it yet, but she's getting a new computer with Leopard on it as soon as I get home next time. And it's a completely automated backup system, which is something that's so important, but so few of us do. All you have to do is plug in an external drive, hit one button, and it does the rest entirely. So it's got a whole bunch of small features that when you kind of add them up, you're going, wow, this is really nice. But they've definitely improved the security. They've improved the speed. They've improved the stability. There's a couple things where they have a couple bugs, and I'm waiting for them to come out with the next little, you know, patch update, which should be out in a couple weeks. But overall, I'm terribly impressed with it. I think it's a home run for Apple. Last month in Japan, macOS 10 outsold Windows Vista. It was pretty amazing. I mean, Apple owns this tiny little share of the market, but for a weekend, they actually outsold Windows.
We'll talk more about Apple computers and accessories as we continue with Joe Rhodes. He is a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison, has been supporting Macs professionally since 1999. You can find out more information at joerhodes.com/WPR. And we'll continue to take your calls here on the Ideas Network. The lines are full at the moment, and we'll continue after the news from National Public Radio in Washington. And I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, as Larry goes off to get ready for the deer hunting season. And we're pleased to welcome in Joe Rhodes, a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison, to talk about Apple computers and accessories. And if you'd like to join in, there is a line open for you in Madison at 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. And if you're on the web, why, you can go to joerhodes.com/WPR and see what Joe's up to. Thanks very much for being in today.
Always fun to be here.
And we talked a little bit about OS X, the new version, Leopard, out. Essentially, what does it cost to install Leopard on a machine?
macOS X Leopard, they've got one version that has everything in it. It's $129. And if you search around, I think sometimes on Amazon it's a little less expensive. I don't quite know how they do that, but they do. It's $129, and it'll run on pretty much any Mac that has a G4 that is 867 megahertz or faster. So any of the flat panel iMac G5s will run fine. Any of the Intel Macs will run fine. Pretty much, you know, almost any of the Macs that have been around in the last 4 years. 867 megahertz seems like a lot, but it actually covers Macs quite a ways back.
Okay. So. And you started off today talking about a Trojan horse, which is aimed at Macintosh, and you wrote a piece about that on the website, correct?
Yeah, exactly. I've got, there's an article on my blog there that will tell you both, you know, kind of a little history about what they are and how you can avoid these things in the first place. They're actually fairly easy to avoid if you just kind of think about what's happening in the situation. And then I've also got some instructions on there and links to other places on how you can get rid of it if you do happen to get it. So,
all right. Let's go to David next in Mountain. David, hi. What's on your mind?
Hi, David.
Good morning. I got a couple questions. After installing Leopard, my external EyeSight camera stopped working with a lot of cam programs. I was wondering if you had any suggestions. And, of course, you know, when you go to Apple, they blame the software, and when you go to the software, they blame Apple. So,
yeah,
you know, and I've gotten nowhere. Some work, but some don't. You know, it doesn't even find the camera or notice it.
Yeah, you know, there's always that kind of a circular thing, and the honest truth is it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, Apple has certainly changed the foundation on which your EyeSight is sitting. The fact that it works in some applications tells me that the EyeSight itself is probably fine, and that macOS 10 is probably, you know, handling it in a new way. It might be that some of these applications you use, you might have to wait a little bit for them to get updated. What applications specifically aren't working, and which ones are?
Actually, Yahoo stopped working. iVisit stopped working.
Okay.
I can't think of the name of the other one offhand.
But things like the Apple apps, like iChat, I assume they work fine. And
Yeah, that works fine.
Yeah, it might be that you might have to hang out a little bit for, you know, some of these applications to, you know, rev them. They might say, oh, no, there's no problem. But when, you know, in all honesty, there probably is. When you did the update, how did you – you had 10.4 on there, I'm assuming?
Correct.
Okay. And you popped the CD in, and did you just do a regular in-place upgrade, just kind of following the prompts?
Yeah, but I did do a reinstall, archive reinstall after a suggestion from Apple.
Okay, I was just going to say that the when installing if you've got, you know, stuff on your hard drive, the best way to do this, and I kind of wish Apple would do this by default. They have an option if you press a little button that says options, and there's a checkbox you can do that says archive and install. And, you know, you already did this, but for the people who don't know what that is, essentially takes your old operating system, kind of slides it off to the side, and puts down a clean new operating system. And the nice part about that is your applications are still there, and your user stuff is all there. You don't lose much, if anything at all, but any weirdness that might have been involved with your old installation kind of gets slid off to the side, and you get a fresh copy. But it sounds like you've already done that.
Yeah, I've tried everything. I've had Apple since 86, so, you know, I basically know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
The other question I had, a suggestion on a repair program, you know, like a Disk Warrior or Tech Tools, what would you use?
Depends on exactly, I'm assuming you're talking about like a hard disk repair situation?
Yeah, all around, just, you know, directory fixing, you know, defragging, kind of all that stuff.
I haven't tried it under 10.5, but I got Disk Warrior kind of as a you know, oh boy, really need it kind of moment. I had a client who didn't back up their hard drive, and their hard drive was really just, you know, Apple Disk Utility wouldn't catch it, and it was in trouble. And I got Disk Warrior, and I used it, and it pulled off everything. I was shocked. So I have good things to say about Disk Warrior. I don't know if they've updated for 10.5 or not, but you can certainly – I think they have a bootable DVD that you can just boot off the DVD and try and do things. As far as just regular maintenance goes, I haven't seen macOS 10 really need a whole lot of that. You know, the biggest, you know, regular stuff you can do is run the Apple's Disk Utility and have it, you know, check for problems, repair them if it needs to. But the rest of the stuff, it kind of does, you know, the daily stuff like defragmenting, it does on the fly. So you don't have to do that anymore. And really, I kind of save Disk Warrior and things like that for times when, okay, I'm out of other options. I got to try something. You know, I don't have a backup and I can't get at the data.
Cool.
All right, David, thanks a lot. Good luck to you. Appreciate hearing from you. And on to Ron in Duluth. And Ron, what can we do for you? Hi, Ron.
Hi. I was thinking of getting a new Mac for my son for Christmas, and I was just wondering if I should get the Leopard operating system or wait for the bugs to be worked out.
Well, if you're buying a new Mac, I don't think you get a choice. I think they all come with Leopard. Now, typically with Apple licenses, if you buy a machine and it comes with macOS 10.5, you are given the rights to, you know, boot an older system, but they don't, you know, they don't include a disk or anything like that. Honestly, I wouldn't be too terribly concerned. I jumped on 10.5 right away. I mean, you know, because I have to find out what it's going to do and how it's going to run, and I'm very curious. Very, very minor issues that I don't think are showstoppers in any way. And actually, the first update, according to the rumor sites, is coming out in about a week. So I don't think it's a situation where you have to worry about, you know, boy, is this going to, you know, really make my life hard? No, I don't think it's going to. There might be, especially if you're getting a brand new machine, I think it's going to be just fine. There might be just, you know, a couple of random apps where you might have to wait a little bit. Like we were just talking with the guy before whose Yahoo isn't quite working with the eyesight, but you know, I think those will be pretty minimal and change pretty quickly, but I don't think it's going to be a case where your son won't be able to get, you know, done what he wants to get done. It's going to work right out of the box.
And what does this Trojan horse do to your computer?
You know, it's reasonably innocuous. It assists with what they call click fraud. So what it does is it basically puts all of the advertisements on the web page to point them to a particular advertisement so that when you click on anything, you know, the way the advertisement works is when you click on a link, Google pays, somehow people get paid. I can't profess to know how this all works, but essentially it replaces all the ads so they all go to one guy. So every time you click on one of these ads, it runs up his earnings instead of everybody's.
All right, Ron.
That's actually what it does.
Good luck to you, and hope that everything turns out well in your search for a new computer.
Oh, your son's going to be really happy.
Yeah. Doug in Lake Geneva, let's get you into the conversation. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, I'm thinking about starting a new business, and we're contemplating using Macs for a point-of-sale system, and I'm wondering if you could comment on that. And general, you know, just general comments about using Mac for retail business.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple ways you can go. Some of them are what's our FileMaker-based. So, I mean, FileMaker is a database system, and then they write applications on top of FileMaker. And the nice part about that is it's really, really flexible, and you can do, you know, practically anything with these. When I lived in San Francisco, I helped a guy with a wholesaling business that was all run on FileMaker. The only thing is FileMaker is still kind of a general purpose application that people write things on top of. Then you can get things that are specific for point of sale. And boy, I wish I could remember the name of this company because I ran across their website. Actually, I had a pamphlet from last year at Macworld, and their stuff looked really, really slick. I mean, it did sales orders. It did, you know, you could put customer information there. You could sell anonymously or to a customer account. You could do purchase orders. It looked really slick and really easy to use. As far as, you know, the aspect of how does this work for a business, I know there's a lot of businesses in Madison that actually, smaller shops that run their stuff on Macs. I can think of a music shop over on Johnson Street that I was helping out with. And I think it's really going to come down to, you know, where are your expertise? Macs tend to be less troublesome on average, but it can be a little trickier to find support for them because, you know, PCs, you can find a PC tech almost anywhere. But if you're more comfortable on the Mac, that's from a business decision, that's going to be a good place for you to start because you can kind of harness all that knowledge you already have.
Well, my wife is in the art business, and she's been using Mac since the mid-80s. So
yeah.
She's real comfortable with, you know, troubleshooting and getting into them in general.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious, you know, basically about the software, you know, that... You know, who's out there that has the point-of-sale systems?
Well, you may not be able to remember that name, but if he emails you, you could probably turn it over for him.
Yeah, absolutely. You can send me an email, or, I mean, even if you can Google, and let me tell you, these people, they will all give you a free trial of this. So you can, you know, they all have, you know, here's a demo that you can download and find out how does it work. Because that's really going to be the thing you'll need to do is get a copy of this and kind of, you know, kick the tires and see how it goes for you.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.
And you can reach joe@joerodes.com in case you wanted to send the email.
Absolutely.
And otherwise, just Google and see what you get.
Google knows everything.
Doug, again, thank you very much for the call. And let's go to Steve in Madison. Steve, what can we do for you?
Good morning. Well, I have a couple questions. I'm going to be buying an iMac.
Okay.
But there are a couple programs that I still have to run in Windows, at least I think I do. One is my tax program, TurboTax, unless that mm-hmm. runs on the Mac, do you know, offhand?
They have, I think, a comparable version made by the same people called Mac Tax or Mac Tax Cut. Or there is a Mac version of that from the same company, but it's got a different title.
Would the files be the same? That, you know, because usually what they do is that, you know, they bring in your 06, you know, information into the 07 automatically and all that.
I'm not sure because I've never done it.
Okay.
I'm lucky enough that I've got a trade arrangement with my accountant, and I fix his PCs, and he fixes my taxes.
Well, that's nice.
It works out well.
On the new Mac, since I will be running, I think I'll be running Windows sometime, and I get to, you know, increase the memory?
Yes, you should absolutely. Yeah. If you're going to run, generally speaking, I think Apple's all ship with a gigabyte of RAM.
Right, a gig, yeah.
And in all fairness, I mean, memory is so cheap. Every Mac should have 2 gigabytes of RAM. It just should because it's an extra gigabyte is $40. I mean, it's really nothing. And if you're going to run 2 operating systems simultaneously, 2 gigs is really what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can afford to put more in there, I would.
Well, I would, except if I put third party in, is that going to mess up? I'm going to get the Apple Care, whatever they call it, program. Would they still take care of things?
No, they still will. Okay. I have found out when I had to send my laptop back once, they very quickly said, okay, well, we found this wrong, and your third-party memory wasn't good. So they just basically take the chip out, and they send it back to you in a separate bag. And Apple does that almost standard issue with every repair that they get. They always say, yeah, third-party RAM.
Mm-hmm.
So they take it out, and they send it back to you. There's almost never anything wrong with it. Memory is one of these things that if there's something wrong with it, you find out pretty quick.
Yeah.
Because your machine will act really bizarre almost right away, and then you can go, wait a minute, and then you pull that chip back out. But no, third-party RAM does not void your warranty, and it does not invalidate your AppleCare plan. And typically what I do is just to avoid some of the fusses, I just take it out and make sure that that's not the cause of the problem. And then if I have to send the machine back to Apple, I just have the RAM out of there so they don't even know it.
I see. Okay. And guys, I'm going to be going to Macworld for the first time just for fun, I guess. And you say something about a first-time person, I know it's huge.
It's huge. The hardest part is just getting around San Francisco. I've only been to about 3 Macworlds. But I'm hopefully heading there this year as well. The only downside is unless you spend a lot of money to buy the special season pass to go see the keynote, I ended up in the basement with hundreds of other people all hunched above our laptops watching these websites to see what Steve was saying directly above us. And I thought that was pretty darn ironic. But no, it's a mammoth show. There's tons of stuff to look at. And they've got little bags that you can carry around that they'll put all kinds of pamphlets and believe me, you're going to walk out with tons of dead trees in your pocket.
All right, Steve, good luck to you, and enjoy the trip. Let's go to Mark in Racine to talk with Joe Rhodes. Hi, Mark.
Hi, I'm hoping you can help. I don't even know if I can describe this well enough for you to triangulate. My daughter, we bought our daughter a Macintosh probably 4 years ago. She was going to school in Oakland.
Okay.
And the thing, I'm talking on the phone, she's got a problem with this computer where it will lock up. And if we run, I don't know, there's a Mac Rescue or something like that. If we run that program several times in sequence, she might get 15 or 20 minutes of running the computer before it locks up. And then each subsequent startup, it will be a shorter time. And finally, it won't start up at all.
Hmm.
And I was wondering if you would have any idea of what this problem might be. If we can get it up to the point where we can actually run the rescue program again.
Oh, yeah.
Then.
Well, there's two things that will cause a computer to crash. One of them is a hardware failure, and the other one is a software failure.
Right.
And, you know, being optimist, you kind of hope that it's a software failure because those are much easier to fix.
Yeah.
So the first thing I would do is try, and I don't know what operating system you've got here. I don't know if you have that information.
OX 10. I think it was early 10, you know.
Okay.
Well, she's got 9 and 10 on there, so.
The first thing you can do, and it depends on how much stuff she has on there and what's going on, but the first thing you can do is try booting from the Mac OS 10 CD. So you put that, you get the computer, I mean, it'll power on okay, won't it?
She's an art student.
But, I mean, the computer will actually power on. We're not talking about a computer that won't
power on. I'm saying I don't think she knows where the CDs are or anything like that.
Yeah, that can be tricky sometimes. And, you know, worst case scenario, assuming the computer is up to it, you might even just want to try buying a copy of Leopard and boot from that CD.
Sure.
But, I mean, hopefully you don't have to go to that extent right away. But if you can boot from the CD, somewhere in the installation, I apologize because they move it around from version to version, but if you go into one of the menus, there's an option to go into Disk Utility. And you can go in there and you can boot from the CD. And first thing I would do is check and just make sure that your hard disk doesn't have some gigantic problems.
Sure.
Okay. And assuming that's okay, then you can proceed with an installation of Mac OS X. And just like I was telling someone here a few minutes ago, in that installation, there's an option that says Archive and Install.
Okay.
And I apologize. I wish I could tell you exactly where it is, but it changes from version to version. But if you poke around a little bit, there's a button somewhere that says Options. You can try and archive and install, and that'll put down a clean copy of Mac OS X and move your current copy off to the side. And hopefully, it's a software issue, and putting down a clean copy of Mac OS X will correct that problem.
Uh-huh.
If it doesn't, then it's pretty likely that you've got something going on with the hardware. And that's a lot trickier to diagnose and solve, and usually your best bet is to take it into an Apple-certified repair specialist.
Okay.
Or, you know, with a four-year-old Mac, you might even want to weigh the pros and cons of that versus, you know, what would it cost just to get a different one.
Well, right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But it's, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's just bad software, and you can, if you put down a clean copy of Mac OS X, and like I said, the archive and install, it does not affect your files, so your pictures and your music and all that is still there.
Sure.
Your applications are still there. There's, you know, a couple things you might have to reinstall just because they don't work well with that, but for the
right.
most part, it works fine.
Okay, well, thanks very
all
much.
All right, Mark, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. And on to Betty in Ashland. Hello, Betty.
Hello. I have a question. I got a new computer about Dell about a month 2 months ago. Okay. And I've got Vista installed, and I'd like to know what your opinion is of Vista, because I find it, before that I had Windows Millennium,
mm-hmm.
and I just loved it. And I didn't realize that with when I bought the Dell, it came with the Vista, and I'm having problems with it. What do you think?
Well, let me preface this with saying I'm primarily a Mac guy, so my opinion's going to be a little bit skewed. But yeah, pretty much all of the PCs you buy are all going to come with Vista. It's just, that's what they do. Microsoft is, that's what they're selling. And there are a couple of computers you can still buy that will have XP on them. And if you go to Dell's website, they will sell you one with XP, but it's you have to jump through a bunch of hoops. You know, I think a lot of people are having trouble with Vista. To be perfectly fair, Microsoft is really changing their core foundation with Vista. They're really doing a lot of stuff new. And Apple went through this, you know, several years ago with macOS 10.0. And let me tell you, when Apple did it the first time, it was pretty rough. And it took them until macOS 10.2. It took them about, you know, a year and a half later, 2 years, before they really had a good, solid operating system that worked well. And I think Microsoft is kind of going through this transition as well. According to the rumor sites, Microsoft is working on a service pack, which is supposed to include a whole bunch of bug fixes and security updates and things like that for Vista. And hopefully that will make things go a little bit better. For you, Betty, I would probably get in touch with somebody who can give you a hand with that Vista machine. My hunch is that, you know, maybe some of this is things that people can, they can work through. Maybe there's just, you know, they need to update some drivers for your particular hardware. Or maybe it's just a matter of they, you know, you just have to find out where this stuff is, and maybe someone who knows what they're doing can kind of point you to the new places. They did move things around in Vista, and the first time I used it, I'm like, hey, where did everything go? I knew where it was in the old version. It's all different now. And so some of it is just, you know, kind of finding where the stuff is. But
what did I have to do to get a new program if I wanted to get XP?
If you wanted to get XP, I don't know if you can send back your current computer, but if you go onto Dell's website and actually go into the small business section, that's where you should be able to find a computer that comes preloaded with Windows XP instead of Vista. And they do that because a lot of businesses are finding that their applications didn't run under Vista. And without that, the computer was completely useless. So the businesses basically demanded that they get XP. And consumers tend to be a little bit more easy going with that kind of stuff, but for businesses, if their main application doesn't run there, so that's why you go onto Dell's website, look at the small business section, you'll probably find one that has XP on it.
And good luck to you, Betty. Appreciate. Wish we could do more for you. On to Doug in Madison. Doug, quickly, what do you have for us?
Okay, two brief questions. One is a 3-year-old iBook, which, even though the battery shows 99% charged, when you unplug it, it's turns off.
Uh-huh.
And the other question is, with a G4 PowerBook, I have some professional recording software. I would love to be able to record streamed internet audio for the purpose of playing back and analyzing.
Sure.
And that kind of thing, but I can't seem to get the recording software to hear the streamed audio.
Right. And let me get to these quickly, because I think we're almost out of time. Batteries tend to fail in bizarre ways. Normally, they kind of lose their charge slowly over time, and they just hold less and less. I just actually, the one in my laptop I had to have replaced, it was only a year old, and it was doing that same thing where I would unplug it, it would run for 10 minutes, said it had 80% charge, and then bang, my machine would shut off. Chances are better than not with a 3-year-old battery that it could just be that the battery has finally kicked up its heels and laid down. And then with the recording thing, there's a couple of ways of doing that. By design, streaming audio is not meant to be recorded. So a lot of, you know, it's not easy to do. There is a program you can get, I think it's called Wiretap. And what it does is it basically records the audio output of your Mac. So if it's playing out the speakers, Wiretap can save it as an MP3 or something like that. And I think that might be what you're looking for.
Doug, good luck to you. Thanks very much. And thanks to you, Joe, for being with us today.
Yeah, fantastic to be here.
The time has flown. Joe Rhodes is a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. His website is joerhodes, joerhodes.com/WPR. And again, if you wanted to email him, just go to joe@joerhodes.com. You can do that too. Coming up tomorrow, Shelley Ryan will be in as the guest host. She's the Wisconsin gardener, and we'll be talking about holiday gift items, gift suggestions for gardeners with the sisters Neuenhaus, Astrid and Sonia Neuenhaus, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to Martinez White for on-air phone production. I'm Jim Packard.